All righty. Great book came out, Jimmy the King. It has to do with our own Suffolk County Police Department, ladies and gentlemen, District Attorney's Office. Gus Garcia Roberts wrote it. It's riveting. I am not nearly done with it, but I wanted him on. I spoke to him yesterday, and nice enough to give us a couple of minutes. Gus, great to have you here on the morning show.
Thanks for having me, Jay.
Tremendous, you know, the accolades. People have been calling me if I've read the book. I said, please, don't tell me anything I don't know yet, please. You know, I'm only in the first portion of your book, Gus, but it's riveting. Give us an idea how it all kind of got started for you with all this regarding Jimmy Burke, the department, the DA's office, and everything else. Give me an idea what's happened.
Sure. So I was at Newsday from 2012 to 2017, which was the time when, you know, the scandal was kind of unraveling involving James Burke and his beating of a heroin addict who stole a duffel bag out of his car that had embarrassing sexual implements, you could say. And I thought that was fascinating. And then, you know, when I learned more about his history, that he had been a teenage witness in one of Long Island's most notorious murders, that of John Pius, and that the prosecutor in that case, Tom Spoda, had sort of taken him under his wing. And eventually both men ended up in federal prison. I just thought that, like, those two bookends of this story were fascinating. It could perhaps, you know, inform a story that had, like, deeper meaning for how law enforcement could go wrong in this case, and how a guy like Jimmy Burke, who by all consensus was not qualified even to be a rookie cop, can rise in the ranks to become the top cop in a major police department like Suffolk County.
Department, no question, and you cited 1979, the slaying of a 13-year-old. And that really puts Suffolk County on the map. You know, listen, you talk Gilgo and everything else in year 2010, 11, and so on as we try to solve here. But Suffolk County actually, Gus, put on the map, you know, when you think about it. You know, you're going back over 40 years. You know, it's unbelievable that it all started right then and there.
Yeah, you know, so back in, like, the late 70s, you know, Suffolk County was, like, 10 years removed from you know, a lot of it being potato farmland, right? And it's sort of like there's this big suburban boom at the time. This kid was, John Pius, was found behind the school with six stones stuffed down his throat. And there's kind of this really horrifying crime, particularly, you know, in that period in Smithtown, New York, because you know, the idea of like the suburban expansion was that crimes like that weren't supposed to take place. So there was a lot of pressure on Spoda, who was the prosecutor, to close the case. And from there, Burke emerged and he had a convenient story, so the case is pretty deeply examined in my book and, you know, going deep on what Burke testified over 11 years as a witness in the case. He's got a lot of inconsistencies. A lot of his testimony kind of shifts, depending on which defendant he, had to go after. It seemed to, you know, it almost seemed like, whatever was needed, to get a conviction for Spoda and for other prosecutors, he always had those sort of magic words. And he was rewarded with a career in the police, as my reporting showed. It was kind of a direct result. Was that he was able to get a job in the NYPD and then Suffolk County and then rise up the ranks. And him and Spoda had this kind of corrosive symbiotic relationship.
Where Burke made his ascent to the top and in one of the country's largest law enforcement jurisdictions, and of course, you know, that relationship, Gus, has always been there. You know, it's always been under the scope as far as the former DA, Tom Spoda, and Jimmy Burke. What was the magnetism, in your estimation? What did Tom Spoda see in Jimmy Burke to kind of you know, be his protege, put him under his wing, protect him at all costs. What do you think it was?
Yeah, I mean, I think initially it was that, you know, he needed witnesses in this case to help this case along, and Burke, you know, was among a group of sort of like juvenile delinquents that testified in the case against the four defendants in the Pius case. And Burke was sort of like the most charismatic of them, and from what I gathered, he would, you know, start hanging out at the homicide offices, was kind of like Hamspota's work son as a teenager. And like another detective, a homicide detective that I spoke to, thought it was really odd to see a kid hanging around the homicide offices. And then from there, they sort of, you know, I think that they almost saw something useful in one another, which was, you know, in Spota, Burke saw somebody who could really pull the levers of power in Suffolk County, had a lot of connections dating back decades. And in Burke, Spota saw, you know, I think somebody who was his conduit to the police. And there's an anecdote in the story that when Spota ran for DA in 2000, that Burke was really instrumental in getting him elected. He acted as the whip, and he basically rounded up cops and had them vote for a dummy candidate in order to siphon votes away to help Tom Spota get elected. And the relationship, I think, sort of continued from that point forward with each of them kind of helping each other until ultimately they brought each other crashing down.
Because, you know, listen, I interviewed Tom Spota. He doesn't do a lot of interviews, but I had two sit-downs with him, an hour each, you know, back in the day. And, you know, Tom Spota, when you look at his line of work and his history, I mean, he was a pretty good prosecutor for the most part. You know, I mean, I went to many a press conference, took down many a drug ring and gang operation in Suffolk County. But yet, there was also another side of him. And this was the side of his, you know, his admiration. Let's put it that way. Underline that a few thousand times. And that for Jimmy Burke. I mean, there was an affiliation there, and he saw something in Burke. And when you look at Jimmy Burke, Gus, you know, and your story here, this was a guy who was on the rise. He had the reign and everything else, and he had a little bit of paranoia about him, you know, and the individual that he was and his regime. And when you look at everything here, you know, he had formed what was kind of like a little crime family. Badges, yeah. Pensions, money, power. I mean, you name it. And even with the Loeb incident, you know, even with the Christopher incident, I mean, that to me really kind of accentuated the pinnacle as far as the reign of Jimmy Burke, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that he operated the police department and especially his inner sanctum as a organized crime family. And he had this, you know, at one point he seemed to be scot-free on the Loeb incident. The feds were pursuing him, but they basically, you know, everybody who knew the police who were in the precinct when he beat Chris Loeb or in Chris Loeb's house when they saw Burke visit, they sort of closed ranks, and that was like very intentional. And you know, that was under pressure from Burke and his minions, basically telling them, you know, this is the story, stick to the story. And the feds could not pierce that. And so at one point the feds had to close their investigation, but then Burke, you know, he, as you said, he was paranoid. He could sort of never stop, you know, his scheming. And so from that point, once he was clear, he decided it's time to screw one of my enemies. And that was John Oliva, who was a detective who specialized in MS-13 cases. And so he opened a wiretap on John Oliva, which was, he had a law enforcement rationale that was helped along by Tom Spota, But in reality, he just hated the guy, and he wanted to see who John Oliva was talking to, and that included a Newsday reporter. And you know, I think that wiretap played a big role in the Fed's once again reopening an investigation, and this time with some renewed vigor because John Oliva was on a federal task force, and he was one of their favored law enforcement officers in Suffolk County. And I think that they were sort of appalled that Jimmy Burke was eavesdropping on his calls with federal agents and attempting to bring him down. And so I think that, you know, that second federal investigation was what really brought all of this down. And it's kind of amazing to think if Burke and also Spoda, you know, the first time that the feds kind of were thwarted, if they had said, okay, you know what, that was a close call, let's actually do police work, let's actually do prosecutorial work, that they could still be in power today, but instead they just could not, you know, take themselves away from this Machiavellian plotting that Burke was so famous for, and it eventually just ended up imploding.
Talking, ladies and gentlemen, with Gus Garcia Roberts. I mean, Jimmy the King, this is a massive hit. Murder, Vice, and Reign of a Dirty Cop. You know, an interesting storyline, Gus, flipping pages here. I'm so curious as to everything in the book. I'm actually going out of order, but I shouldn't. You know, is the fact of Jimmy Burke regarding elections and insisting on an excerpt in the book on absentee ballots for a primary contest, rather than trusting cops to vote on election day. I mean, you talk about a guy who had severe paranoia and really kind of lining up the fact of a very corrupt situation being involved as far as the process of the election. I mean, that one stood out to me in a big way, you know?
Yeah, and you know, I thought it was pretty telling. Basically, what it was Burke, like I said, he sort of rounded up cops to vote for essentially a dummy candidate, which was a former baseball player who was a lawyer. But he became a lawyer after he retired from baseball, but he worked as a sports agent. But he had never worked in criminal law. But this guy was part of a scheme in which votes would go for he was given the conservative endorsement, and that's because of Burke sort of acting as the whip with police who voted for him, and because of that, you know, those votes were then siphoned away from Tom Spoda's opponent, and it played a sort of small but pivotal role in getting Tom Spoda elected. And so you sort of see this kind of very interesting dynamic, which is that you know, police acting basically as politicians, right? I mean, or pulling political strings. And I think Jimmy Burke was really, basically from that point forward, you know, from the late 90s forward, was basically more of a politician than a police officer. And as a result, you know, he had a lot of politicians in his pocket, and he had politicians beholden to him, and those are the people that could have stopped him, and yet at every turn they stood with him, even as it sort of became more and more obvious that this guy was like an open sore. It's an example of sort of some of the toxic results that can occur when politics and policing mix, I think.
Yes, it's almost to the point where Burke, you know, cut to the front of the line all the time. And case in point, even being chosen, you know, as the top cop. And when you think about it, where you have the top individual in the county who bypassed procedure in order to make the selection of Jimmy Burke as the chief. You know, we can even cite examples in that regard as far as, you know, how this guy walked on water in so many people's minds. You know that? Even the process of him getting that top job.
Right. I mean, well, so Jimmy Burke was in the DA's office, in Tom Spoda's DA's office as the chief of detectives. And he played a direct role in the investigation of Steve Levy, the sort of very shadowy investigation. Well, the public still doesn't know what it turned up. All we know is that Levy left office, as mandated by Tom Spoda. So Burke had a direct hand in Levy leaving. And then that opens up a slot for Steve Ballone. And ultimately, Steve Ballone, if you want to look at it one way, has Burke and Spoda to thank for being named county executive, being elected county executive, for having that slot open and for having a chance at all. And Ballone then sort of inverts the way in which it has been traditionally done, and instead of naming a commissioner who then names the chief of department, he names Burke as chief of department and says, "We'll decide commissioner later." And, you know, even at that time, before Burke was really a known entity in Suffolk County outside of the police department, there were objections of why are we naming a chief of department first? And Ballone would sing Burke's praises and talk about Burke's kind of trademark policing method, which was intelligence-led policing, which, you know, if I spoke to a lot of people that were involved in this saga and including the guy who made the PowerPoint that Burke showed to Ballone that kind of won him over with intelligence-led policing, and they kind of scoff at the idea that's anything cutting edge, you know, and it's sort of just jargon of the sort that Burke would use to win people over. It was an example of Burke kind of muscling his way into a position where he really shouldn't have had. And there were warnings at that time, internal warnings written by cops within the Suffolk ranks, saying, you know, this guy has a checkered IAB history. He's done X, Y, and Z. Sending in allegations that Steve Ballone and others read that were quite detailed, and they were essentially dismissed. And you know, for those cops, it was pretty frustrating because, you know, in their mind, what they were trying to do was save the department from sort of, you know, ensuing mortification if this guy, who they essentially considered a criminal, was to rise to the rank to the top of their department. And, you know, that's actually what ended up happening.
Yeah, and finally, you know, Gus, I'm going to have to bring you back. This is fascinating. Short on time and everything else. But, you know, it just brings into play where covering Gilgo and all that has transpired over the last 12 years. And you look at the department of how everything kind of got started and the shift of a Richard Dormer off the case and whatnot. You know, you just have a sense, even with a new regime, with a new commissioner, that there is something not right. You know, there's something that still kind of permeates somewhat. And I say that only because, you know, you go back to the press conference on Friday with the detective lieutenant in charge of homicide, and it just didn't make sense. You know, there's a lot of things I scratch my head about. I talk to a lot of people, a lot of experts. They do as well, more so than me, who have experience in the business and everything as far as enforcement. But there is something till this day that permeates an odor. And it's just unbelievable to me because, you know, you go back to 1979 and the Pius incident, and we talk over 40 years ago. But still, you know, you wonder if things have changed. Is there a cleansing that needs to be done? Is there some toxicity that still exists? You know, you can only wonder on this, you know? It's just fascinating to me. I'll give you a final comment on that. Go ahead, my friend.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, you know, I think that there's sort of been an effort since Burke or shipped off to prison to sort of say, you know, this is the boogeyman. Everything is Burke's fault. Everything in Suffolk County is Jimmy Burke's fault. But, you know, I think in reality, Burke just reflected what was already broken in Suffolk County. And as you said, you know, dating back to the 70s, dating back to the days of coerced confessions by police, being alleged in you know, murder case after murder case. And the Gilgo case, of course, factors heavily in the book. And what I just thought was that Botha and Burke, the way that I saw them, you know, it's called Jimmy the King, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's a biography of Jimmy Burke. What I kind of see it as is a way of using Burke to sort of show, you know, all of the pitfalls and failings that he took advantage of, and kind of illuminate how the county's governance and law enforcement could go so wrong for so long. And I felt he was kind of like, you know, the Forrest Gump of Suffolk County law enforcement in that way.
It's a fascinating story. I mean, I would kind of sum it up as a crime family within the family. You know, the badges, the pensions, the money, the power, the paranoia, and the fall of a cop and his regime, and a corrupt one at that. Fascinating book. Jimmy the King, ladies and gentlemen. Murder, Vice, The Reign of a Dirty Cop, Gus Garcia Roberts. I'll tell you, I could see this as a movie one day. I really, really can. Gus, a tremendous job. Yep. I can't wait to finish it this week, and I would love to have you back on.
Please do. I'd love to be back on. Thanks so much. This is great.
Appreciate it all.